For over four decades, Michael Mansfield has been the lawyer prosecutors dread seeing across the courtroom. From the Birmingham Six to Princess Diana's inquest, from Stephen Lawrence's murder to Bloody Sunday, he's built a career on a simple premise. The powerful should be held accountable, and the system isn't always right. His story begins in the most unlikely place, a middle-class household during the London Blitz, where loyalty to Queen and country was unquestioned. His father lost a leg in WW1. His mother drove ambulances through bombed-out streets. Young Michael joined the combined cadet force, becoming one of the Army's first junior underofficers. Nothing suggested he'd become the establishment's worst nightmare, but two moments changed everything. First, his mother successfully fought a false parking ticket, then warned him, "Never trust a man in uniform." Second, Cambridge and Kiel rejected him after his father's death. Rather than accept defeat, he showed up unannounced at the admissions tutor's home. When asked what he'd do with £1 million, he said he'd give half to his widowed mother and travel the world with the rest. He got in. That boldness, that refusal to accept the official answer, would define his entire career. Most 1970s lawyers treated forensic science as gospel. Mansfield treated it as fallible witness testimony. Defending Angela Weir of the Angry Brigade, urban guerrillas bombing banks and conservative homes, he pioneered blind testing. Multiple experts analyzed identical handwriting samples and reached wildly different conclusions. What prosecutors called science was subjective interpretation. Angela walked free. His most devastating exposure came with the Birmingham Six, convicted of pub bombings based on the Grace test detecting explosives on their hands. Dr. Frank Skews testified with absolute certainty. Mansfield demolished it. Ferry passengers tested positive after handling tape, laboratory soap triggered false positives, and the supposed residue required absurd nitroglycerin quantities. The Home Office laboratory had concealed false positive evidence for years. After 16 years imprisoned, the Six walked free in 1991. Court-won scientific certainty often masks laboratory scientific uncertainty. Angela Canning's lost three infants to sudden death. Prosecutors saw pattern, not tragedy. Professor Roy Meadow, a renowned pediatrician, deemed multiple infant deaths statistically impossible rather than potentially genetic. The prosecution emphasized circumstantial details. Angela was alone during each death, delayed calling ambulances, and noted preceding breathing difficulties. Yet she had no history of violence or psychological disturbance. Mansfield's team discovered eight other infant deaths in Angela's extended family, strongly suggesting genetic factors. It didn't matter. She was convicted and sentenced to life. The breakthrough came when journalist John Sweeney uncovered Angela's previously unknown half-sister, whose child had breathing problems from birth. The Court of Appeal ruled that multiple deaths alone cannot justify assuming murder. If every known cause is excluded, the cause remains unknown, not murder by default. Angela was freed, though her marriage didn't survive. The case exposed a terrifying truth. When we can't explain tragedy, we'd rather blame someone than accept uncertainty. DNA revolutionized criminal justice, but created a dangerous myth of infallibility. A 1 in a 1,000,000 match doesn't guarantee guilt. In a population of 50 million, approximately 50 people share that profile. This confusion, the prosecutor's fallacy, imprisoned innocent people like Michael Shirley and Sean Hodgson, who served decades before DNA proved their confessions false. The UK maintains the world's largest per capita DNA database with 4.5 million profiles, including 24,000 from unconvicted young people. The racial disparity is staggering, 40% of black men versus 9% of white men, what Commander Ali Desai called institutional racism. In 2008, the European Court of Human Rights ruled keeping innocent people's DNA records breached human rights. Mansfield's deeper concern? With government security lapses and DNA transfer potential, innocent citizens whose DNA appears at crime scenes face reversed burden of proof. DNA is remarkable, but treating it as infallible ignores both its scientific limitations and potential for misuse. Non-disclosure has plagued British justice since the 1970s. police concealed Jerry Conlon's alibi for the Guildford bombings and hid that Stephen Kisco was physically incapable of his alleged crime. In Judith Ward's case, West Yorkshire police withheld 1,700 witness statements, many proving she was a pathological liar. Three senior scientists deliberately concealed evidence, misrepresented test results, and hid that substances like boot polish could produce similar readings. They knowingly placed a false and distorted scientific picture before the jury. The Ward judgment briefly mandated sharing all unused evidence, but the 1997 Criminal Procedure and Investigations Act created a dangerous system where legally untrained police officers decide what might undermine the prosecution. In Paula Guilfoyle's case, journalist Dominic Kennedy later obtained supposedly destroyed police notes containing a doctor's time of death estimate, placing her husband Eddie at work when she died. The problem intensified with intercept evidence, telephone taps so sensitive you cannot even ask if it happened. Mansfield represented terrorism defendants where phone taps would have proven innocence, but could only request judges ensure prosecutors didn't contradict intercept information. Stephen Lawrence, 18 and studying architecture, was murdered in an unprovoked racist attack on April 22, 1993. Within 24 hours, police had names, Jamie and Neil Acourt, David Norris, and others, from an informant and an anonymous letter warning they were dangerous knife users. Yet the response was inexcusable. No crime scene sealed, no roadblocks. Suspects visited days later after evidence was destroyed. By 1994, desperate parents Neville and Doreen mounted a rare private prosecution. Three suspects went to trial, but the judge ruled key witness Duane Brooks inadmissible, gutting their case. At the 1997 inquest, the five suspects mockingly replied, "I claim privilege," to every question. Still, the jury declared Stephen unlawfully killed in a completely unprovoked racist attack by five white youths. The Daily Mail published their famous "murderers" headline. The suspects never sued. The McPherson inquiry followed, publishing 70 recommendations in February 1999. It acknowledged institutional racism within the police. Jack Straw declared it a catalyst for fundamental and irreversible change across society. Mansfield has spent decades advocating for international justice, despite cynics dismissing it as utopian claptrap. Defending Fatmir Limaj, a Kosovo Liberation Army commander accused of war crimes, at The Hague renewed his faith. In his closing address, Mansfield asked judges to imagine themselves in Fatmir's position. If you were abroad watching your homeland being destroyed, how much easier would it be to say, "I'm not going back there. Let others do the fighting"? Witnesses testified to Fatmir's humanitarian efforts, providing shelter, food, and medical supplies to displaced children. In November 2005, Fatmir was acquitted. Tens of thousands lined Kosovo's streets as he addressed 100,000 people in Pristina Stadium. International law now stretches across national frontiers. Not foolproof, not always fair, but without it, the world would be far poorer. Mansfield's career proves that justice isn't a system, it's a fight. From Bloody Sunday families who waited 38 years for vindication, to mothers wrongly accused of murdering their children, the most significant victories come through ordinary people who refuse to surrender. His story reveals what happens when we reject injustice as inevitable. The courtroom becomes a battlefield, and sometimes, against all odds, the powerless win.